story of Mert and Marge. A new element entered the Ray Hunt murder investigation in the last episode, when detectives picked up Jimmy Minter. Jimmy explained to Jack Arnold that he had never gone to California. Instead, he went to Florida, where he won $3,000 on horse races. Then came the surprise. Jimmy gave information to Jack and Captain O'Toole that established a perfect alibi for Vivian Clark the night Ray Hunt was killed. It was another damaging blow to Mert. Now, in just a moment, we'll hear today's episode in the thrilling story of Mert and Marge. The scene is District Attorney Walker's office. It is the following day, and Captain O'Toole has just entered. The District Attorney says...
Sit down, O'Toole. Have a cigar?
Thank you, sir.
What's on your mind?
Well, Mr. Walker, I hate to butt into the district attorney's business in his department, but you've assigned Jack Arnold to this Hunt murder case, and he's getting nowhere.
Captain, you know that Arnold is the best man I have in my office. Look at what he did with that Houston outfit. He's rounded up more criminals than all the assistants in this office put together.
Yeah, I know, but this is different.
What's different about it? It's murder, isn't it? Nothing unusual. They happen every day.
Yeah, but this is different. Jack Arnold knows and is friendly with every chorus girl in Hayfield's Pleasures. Knows all the principals, Hayfield, even down to Pat the Doorman.
Well, what of it? It ought to make things easier.
Well, it's the sentiment of the thing. He's too friendly with those two girls. That spear girl and her roommate, Margie Minter. He's told me that he's almost like a father to that pair, or something.
What do you mean, or something?
Well, maybe he's in love with one of them.
Oh, don't be silly. I know Jack Arnold too well for that. His heart and soul are in his work. And he's got no time for foolishness.
I tell you, Walker, there's no sentiment about this case as far as I'm concerned.
Well, go to it, O'Toole. Hammer and tongs. If necessary, I'll step in. Have you come to any conclusions?
Just about. It was a woman who killed Hunt. The motive was either jealousy or fear of someone in gang affairs.
You haven't been able to find the gun yet, have you?
No, but it's somewhere in that theater. There'd been plenty of places to hide it. The boys haven't given up the hunt yet.
And you're sure everybody is searched when he leaves the theater?
There are 2 men at the stage door during every show and during the day.
Quite a bit of time has elapsed since the murder. If they haven't found that gun yet, chances are they won't find it.
Well, we've got enough evidence without finding the gun. And we've got 2 motives. 1, jealousy. And 2, fear of exposing a past. That's in addition to what we know about the gangland connections of my number one suspect, Myrtle Spear.
Oh, hello, Mr. Walker.
Hello, Jack.
Hi.
Hello, Mr. Arnold.
Well, Arnold, things look all set as far as my department is concerned. Your 2 theories are all washed up. Mrs. Hunt is not guilty. You admit that, don't you?
If the statements of Mr. and Mrs. Thorne are true, yes.
Well, they are. And don't forget Bidwell, the automobile starter in front of the theater. And don't forget Mrs. Reed, who saw Mrs. Hunt at 48th Street and Broadway at 8:20 the night Hunt was knocked off.
I'll be very glad if it clears Mrs. Hunt of suspicion. And I really don't think that Vivian committed the crime.
That Minter fellow will be the best bet this Vivian has. And it's funny, she says she's never even seen him before. I had the 2 of them together today, and it was very plain that there wasn't any bribing to get him as a witness for her.
How do you know that, O'Toole?
Well, I asked him if he was sure he had told the truth, and he swore he had. I asked him if he realized that by establishing an alibi for Vivian, that he made it look bad for Myrtle Spear. He almost threw a fit and tried to crawfish. He said maybe the fella he saw slumped down in the chair was only asleep. He said he couldn't swear he was dead. In fact, he said he thought the fellow was sitting up. When I got through working on him, he decided his first statement was correct.
I can imagine.
Then I started grilling him about those gangsters Myrtle Spear was connected with. I didn't get much out of him on that. All he kept saying was that you knew all about it, Jack, and that you'd tell us about it.
I do know all about it. Here, I have 2 pieces of mail I talked to you about. One came this morning and the other late this afternoon. The one that came this morning is from Mexico City. It's, signed Duke Sanfield. You ever hear of him?
The name is familiar.
Yeah. It's the name that's on that card we found in Spear's apartment.
When Myrtle Spear received the card, Duke Sanfield was managing the Sanfield Club up at 79th Street.
Yes, I know the place. High-class gambling joint. It's been closed up for some time.
Yes, Duke Sanfield managed the place, but it was owned by Spike Duffy, the Chicago gangster.
After we cleaned up the Houston gang, that whole Duffy outfit got out of New York.
Yes, Mr. Walker, but during the time they were here, the newspapers made a great event about Myrtle Spear having disappeared with Harry Duffy. You remember that, O'Toole. Now, I'll read you this letter from Duke Sandfield.
You know the fellow, Ronald?
Yes, I know him by another name. I once knew him under other circumstances, but that's neither here nor there.
Go ahead, Jack.
It says, Dear Jack, I have been following the newspapers very closely on the Hunt murder case. I noticed the police are trying to connect Myrtle Spear with the crime by using the publicity she received when she disappeared with Harry Duffy. You may or may not know where she was at that time. Will you please tell her to hold nothing back about her disappearance or anything surrounding the incident? I know the position you would have to take should Miss Spear be under suspicion. Will you please tell her for me that should she need me at any time, I will do everything in my power to help her. I'll continue following the news reports to see if she does need me. I am sending you my affidavit, duly sworn, stating that Myrtle Spear has never at any time been connected in any way with me or with any person connected in any business in which I have been concerned. I have written to Spike Duffy and have advised him that a similar affidavit would be of a great help in clearing Miss Spear. My kindest regards to her and to you. I wish you luck. Sincerely, Duke Sandfield. Here's the affidavit, O'Toole. You may read it for yourself.
You got that today, eh?
Yes, and here's an affidavit from Spike Duffy. This came this afternoon. You, care to read it?
Yes, I would. I'd glance over it. He doesn't say anything in here about that proposition he made to us. You know, we had the letter that was found in Spears' apartment. The one in which he made some proposition offering her a position as a hostess or something like that in a new joint he's going to open in Florida?
Well, what of it? She ignored the proposition and never answered the note.
Just the same, there's something funny about it.
Well, O'Toole, there was something funny about Harry Duffy's murder, too. You didn't follow that up very closely, and that was your job. And what about Belden of the Houston gang? Something funny about that murder, too.
Are you accusing me of not attending to my job?
I'm not accusing you of anything, O'Toole. You were just not very persistent in those two cases, but you certainly are overdoing yourself in trying to pin Hunt's murder on an innocent girl.
Just a minute, Arnold. How do you know this Myrtle Spear is innocent? The evidence against her that has come into this office is quite strong. Don't you think your judgment is being carried away by your sentiment?
Mr. Walker, sentiment has nothing to do with it. I know the girl is innocent. If I really thought she killed Ray Hunt, no sentiment in the world would stop me from doing my duty. And if Captain O'Toole is honest in his belief that Myrtle Spear is a big factor in the killing of Hunt, I have nothing more to say, Mr. Walker.
Arnold, do you think for 1 minute I would accuse any woman of killing a man if I weren't honest in my belief? But look at all the evidence we have against the Spear girl.
Circumstantial evidence. No real concrete evidence except the say-so of the vindictive woman, Billy DeVere, and a lot of hearsay.
In my way of thinking, the evidence is conclusive enough to go to the grand jury.
You mean the evidence against Myrtle Spear?
Exactly. You see, Arnold, I am not a sentimentalist.
O'Toole, what is your conclusive evidence?
The statements of 24 girls, which include Myrtle Spear's statement that they saw Nell Davis take the gun from Tiffing Tupper's pocket.
Just a minute, O'Toole. How would 24 girls see Nell Davis take a gun from the pocket when none of them knew the gun was in the pocket?
Well, they all saw her hold the gun in her hand. They knew she had found it in his pocket.
She said she held the gun with two fingers.
Well, all right for that. They all saw her put it on the shelf. They all know exactly where she put it. Even Spear admits that. Each girl is allotted 3 feet of space under that shelf for her clothes. Now, Spear's space was at the extreme end. The next 3 feet is for the girl Margie's clothes. The two girls dressed there together. And in that particular, just where they put their hats and things up on that shelf. Now, the gun was put up on that shelf just about on the dividing line between Margie's space and the space allotted to Nell Davis, whose clothes hang next to hers. The costume designer brought in the clean gloves for that letter number, and the Spear girl was all dressed. She put on the gloves, then reached up on that shelf for a cap.
Just a minute, O'Toole. If Myrtle Spear was in such a hurry to get out of that dressing room, wouldn't she have reached for her cap first, put it on her head, and then put on the gloves on the way out or on the way upstairs?
That's just it. She put those gloves on first, then reached for the cap. And when she reached for the cap, she put that revolver in the cap.
No.
She put the cap on her head and went upstairs to Hunt's office. She closed the door, leaving no fingerprints because she wore gloves, and shot him. Then she opened the door, went out again, and in those 12 minutes that elapsed before she saw Pat coming from across the stage, she hid that gun.
Sounds very plausible.
You don't believe that she went down into the sewing room and sewed on that top button to her coat?
I do not.
Well, I do.
What about the trick Margie pulled? Cutting that button off and sewing it back on again with black thread.
The poor little kid thought she was helping Myrtle. She didn't realize what she was doing.
She realized that the top button had never been off since the coat was made. She said so.
She said it looked as if it hadn't been off.
And here's another thing, Arnold. Going back to that cap, Billy DeVere has sworn that when Myrtle Spear reached up on the shelf for that cap, She saw her fumbling around as if reaching for something.
It's a downright lie. No one else saw her fumbling around for anything up on that shelf.
When Rogers said she thought she saw the same thing?
Oh, Gwen Rogers, she's an imbecile. And as for Billy DeVere, she's nothing but a vicious, dangerous woman.
Dangerous for Myrtle Steele.
Oh, cool, if you could...
Oh, wait a minute. Arnold, I'm afraid your attitude toward this case forces me to appoint someone else.
Mr. Walker, that suits me perfectly. Spears' position is precarious indeed. Her strongest ally, Jack Arnold, has been taken off the Ray Hunt murder case. Now there's no one to protect her from Captain O'Toole's relentless pursuit. Only a miracle can ward off the tragedy that seems about to befall her. Be sure to listen to the next episode of the story of Mert and Marge. This is Andre Baruch speaking.